This is Writers Not Writing, the show where you can get to know your favorite writers and soon-to-be favorite writers by listening to them confess to the ways they procrastinate. Thanks for procrastinating with us. I'm Benjamin Gorman, and the quiet guy behind the glass there is Doug the producer. I write novels and collections of poetry and stuff. Doug tries his best to make me sound better. And each week we have a secret word to listen for. If you catch it, you earn the right to take an extra break at the time of your choosing from whatever is stressing you out. From Not a Pipe Publishing, welcome to Writers Not Writing.
Today's word of the day is wonders.
Hail and well met, readers and reviewers. Today's guest is Joshua Robbins. Josh is the author of Praise Nothing from University of Arkansas Press, 2013, part of Miller Williams Series in Poetry, and most recently, Eschatology in Crayon Wax from Texas Review Press, 2024. His recognitions include, among others, the James Wright Poetry Award, the New South Prize, and a Walter E. Dakin Fellowship in Poetry from the Sawney Writers Conference. He teaches creative writing at the University of the Incarnate Word and lives in San Antonio. Josh, welcome to the show. It is really good to see you. I think I should reveal that we know each other from undergrad, from way back when at what is now Whitworth University. Sounds very fancy. Whitworth College, where we both attended. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I am, if I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty tired. It's National Poetry Month. And in San Antonio, I mean, regardless of National Poetry Month, there's always something poetry in San Antonio. But in April, it's just one thing after another. So I was at, I don't know how many events, almost once a day, once every evening. Wow. So it's pretty challenging here for,
are those put
for our
on
family
through
too.
The university, or are those things that are, you know, through, the, is the city just really supportive of its poets?
Absolutely. It's the city. It's the community. I mean, there are readings in every single bookshop, open mics, spoken word events, performances. So, it's a great place to be in if you're a city. But I just wanted to share a quick anecdote and ask you a question and see if you remember this, because this is one from Whitworth that has stayed with me for years. Because, you know, you and I haven't kept up really since
Whitworth. Not until we ran into one another at the conference, the
is it AWP, right?
The AWP, yes. And it was like, oh my gosh, you're teaching at the time. Were you weren't at the University of Incarnate Word yet? I think you were still at Arkansas. Were you at Arkansas?
I might have been at Tennessee still, I'm not sure.
Oh yeah.
But I think you had the press going.
Yes.
And we talked about that, but I wonder if you remember this. This would have been the very beginning of my first year. So that would have been, what, 97, maybe?
So my junior year? No, my junior year.
Could have been. And I was in front of my dorm and was wearing a Bauhaus t-shirt. And you, and you were sort of off in the distance, all black, smoking cigarettes, super cool. I was like, who is that guy? And you walked over and you're like, man, I like your t-shirt. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's talking to me. I felt like I was like the coolest kid on campus. And then you were sort of went into a monologue about Love and Rockets. And I was like, oh my God, I am such a fraud. Like I'm such a poser. But you were so kind and so gracious. And, I'm grateful for that because you sort of for the next couple of years, you kind of took me under your wing a little bit. I don't even know if you're like aware of that, but that's what it was like. Conversations.
Yeah, and this is, my perspective is so different on that because I'm like, well, I saw somebody who was one of my people at a school where, I was like, I had Troy Miller, another mutual acquaintance of ours, used to call me Christian College Rebel Boy. I didn't feel like, oh, here's, the cool guy on campus. I felt like, well, here's this I am this outcast. Oh, look, somebody's got a Bauhaus shirt. Somebody else will understand. So I did not at all feel like I never felt like the cool kid on campus. I always felt like a, here's this guy. And so, yes, I was like, hey, somebody who's one of my people, who recognizes this band. I mean, so often some of those, the band t-shirts are really about saying, does anybody else know who this is? I'm a
It is
weirdo.
exactly. Yeah, just holding up that sign like,
Yeah.
somebody come pay attention,
I'm
somebody love me,
strange
somebody.
too. Yes. So that was, yeah, that was right away. I was like, oh, he and I are going to get along.
No,
That is
that's too
awesome.
funny.
Yeah. And I lingered in Spokane for a couple of years after I graduated because my ex-wife was still there in school. She was 2 years behind me. And so I stuck around Spokane. And for folks who don't know Spokane, it is an odd place because it is this city that once upon a time had a purpose. It was the entertainment hub for silver miners in Western Montana and or Eastern Montana and Idaho, Western Montana and Idaho. It's the only thing between Seattle and Minneapolis, Minnesota. Like there are no other major cities. And so they would come to the opera house and that kind of thing. And the city still exists and is a large population center. There's like a million people there, I think, in the valley, all told, without any real sense of this is why it's here. Like there's not a particular large industry that draws people there. So it's a weird vibe. Some people call it Spo Vegas. And it does have this weird feeling of like this is urban sprawl without the large urban center that connects it.
Yeah,
And
and what's the main
stuck around
street
there
that
for a couple of
runs?
years.
Is it Division? Is that the main street
Yes.
that runs?
Yeah,
Yeah,
north to
it's
south.
just strip mall after strip mall after
Yep.
strip mall after strip mall. And that's Spokane. That's the whole point, is
Yeah.
you go shopping, right?
Yeah.
You
Well, at one point, I
work in the
went to a
mall and shop
Barnes
at
and
the mall.
Noble. I think it was a Barnes and Noble. And I applied for a job. And they said, basically, to get a job at this Barnes and Noble, you have to have a master's degree because there are so many people who stuck around Spokane, got their master's in literature, and have nothing to do. There's no way that the small universities there, you've got Gonzaga, you've got Whitworth, where we attended, you've got there's a community college, I believe, can support all of the overeducated folks who are just hanging around this town for reasons that we cannot possibly explain. And so I was like, I can't get a job at a bookstore in this town with an undergrad in English lit. I got to get out of here. But yeah, so you were there through when did you graduate?
2001.
Okay, 01. And then from there, did you go off and do the, straight to master's and PhD?
Yeah, so my wife and I were married right after I graduated, just like you do at Whitworth, right?
Yes, that's a
And
very
then
Whitworth, small Christian university thing to do.
yep. And then we went to Eugene, so I went, got my MFA in creative writing at Oregon. And then we were there for a few years, and Emily taught high school English, and I just did whatever jobs I could get. And then we moved to Kansas, and Emily went to grad school at KU. And then after, so that was 2008, then we moved to Knoxville, Tennessee. And that's where I did my PhD in English, and where I wrote most of my first book. And then after that, graduated from there and moved, got a tenure track job by some miracle
Yeah,
here in
that's
San
wonderful.
Antonio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and in a city that is so pro poetry, that's a you know that's that worked out really well. And do you like San
Have you
Antonio?
ever been?
I have
Sorry?
not. My dad, when he was in the Air Force, was stationed in San Antonio and raves about it. He loves the city of San Antonio. I have been through. I'm not even sure if I've been through. I would have been pretty young, traveling through, but I haven't even done like the Riverwalk, like the stuff the tourists do. I've never had that experience. So I really would like to get to come check out San Antonio. It's a little on the warm side for my taste. I don't know if I could live there, but I would love to get to see it. So,
Well, that's why we invented air conditioning.
yeah.
It will knock you down. The heat will knock you down. But it is so worth it. to live here. We love the city. We could not imagine living anywhere else. I mean, Emily's from the Pacific Northwest. I'm from California in the Pacific Northwest. It would take a lot to get us out of here and back into old places. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'm glad you were. I see, and I'm a big NBA basketball fan, and San Antonio is a great NBA town, really, just because of the coach. It's managed to have great team after great team in a small market, and now you've
Yeah.
got Wemby, and so yeah, that's that alone. I should come down and watch a basketball game and get to see the guy they're calling the alien. Those of you who don't know about Wembanyama, they've got a new player on San Antonio who is 7 foot, I believe 7'4". The guy is absolutely monstrously tall and skinny and really good, like genuinely good. And this season they are really letting him grow, and they are okay with losing a lot of games. And I think in the long run, you're gonna have a really good basketball team there in town. Yeah, it's so I think of San Antonio, and right away I think of the Spurs. Like, oh yeah, but
Of course.
there's a lot going on, and it's politically, if you had to kind of typify it, because I think of Texas and I'm like, ah, terrifying, as a liberal. But and I think of Austin as this weird enclave. Where is San Antonio in that spectrum?
If you look at the map every election, there the you've got Houston, Austin, San Antonio. Those are the bright blue spots. Sort of El Paso, maybe sort of parts of Dallas. Coincidentally, that's where all the people live, right? Big major populations are there, but it's never enough. But no, San Antonio is very much certainly more progressive than the state as a whole. I mean, there are things that we would want to do in the city, especially in terms of unhoused people and access to healthcare and food deserts and things that are very, very, very local. But generally, it's a pretty progressive city. I mean, it's also, I gotta say, like, I exist in the arts community.
True.
So, that's everybody's kind of we're all playing for the same team here in that way. But I've never had any kind of confrontational argument with anyone. I mean, there was a guy at the grocery store that I almost talked to the other day who had a, like one of those dress shirts that's like a American flag,
Yes.
and he had a big MAGA hat and like this sort of like scarf, bandana sort of thing. It was really strange, and it's a Democrat stuck. He was like wearing it around his
Yeah.
neck. And he had a Let's Go Brandon. I just noticed it, like one of those rubber bracelet things.
Wow. That's
And
not
he
going
was
to age
quite
well.
upset because one of my boys like just slightly stepped in front of him on his way to get avocados. And I'm sure that was a whole liberal
I
conspiracy,
was going to say, yeah.
for the most part, everybody's is very tolerant, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, and let's acknowledge, I mean, he was wearing the Bauhaus shirt of his tribe, right? He was saying, I want to make it very, very clear that I am an outsider in liberal San Antonio, and so I'm going to wear the Bauhaus shirt of my tribe. And he sure put on the costume, and respect. Like, I get it.
That
Speaking of costumes,
is.
that's a good segue
Yeah.
for us. So here
Nice.
on the show, we always dress up in these costumes. The folks who are watching on YouTube can see. We go all out with our costumes for the show, but the folks on the podcast don't know what we're wearing, and yours is amazing and requires some explanation. So tell everybody what you've chosen to wear for the show today.
So I'm 6'3", and I am wearing a janitor's cart, a Josh Robbins sized janitor cart. It's got a flat bed with some really large, maybe 10-inch wheels so that it can roll pretty easily. Huge kind of Rubbermaid rubbish compartment, another compartment for mops and brooms and the like and cleaning products. And I just kind of like sit right down in there. I've got some a little door so I can look out and see where I'm going, make sure I can see where I'm going. I do need somebody to push me, But
And
it's
they
a
should be
it's
wearing a
a
janitor's costume. I mean, you need a
yes,
costume.
they do. They do, my partner. They do wear that. So yeah, it's been a pretty successful costume. Not so much during Halloween, because the sidewalks go up and down are sort of bumpy. It wasn't very comfortable, but just sort of around town
Yeah.
works pretty well.
Well, and so tell everybody what inspired this, because I think this is very clever.
Okay. Well, inspired is too generous. I mean, this is just blatant ripoff. Have you heard of Taylor Swift? Do you
I
know
have
this
heard the name. Yes.
phenomenon?
I believe this person is incredibly famous.
Yes, she is. And so she's been on this Eras tour and these enormous arenas, but there are some arenas where it's set up that she can't get from, her own sort of private staging area to the backstage without having to go out onto the arena floor to get to backstage. And so they put together this janitor's cart that she like climbs into and scrunches down and sits in there, and they wheel her to the back of the stage. Of course, of course, everybody knows
Now,
now, and
yes.
everybody watches for the janitor's cart.
That's
But I
brilliant.
just love that. Yeah.
I love it. And so in keeping with that costume idea, I went with this. The folks who are watching can see I am dressed as the armorer from The Mandalorian. And you might think, why a janitor's cart and the armor from The Mandalorian? But similar to Taylor Swift's need to kind of hide herself, the actress Emily Swallow will attend Comic-Cons dressed in her full armorer costume. And those of you who've watched the show know we never see Emily Swallow outside of that costume. So fans of the show do not know what she looks like. So she goes to these, and the other actors, she gets in line and lines up to get signatures from her colleagues. And then she goes through the line very slowly, and she works her way up to meet Esposito and these other stars of the show. And then reveals herself on video, and they realize, oh, I'm talking to somebody that I've been on set with for weeks and weeks, So there are some really fun, great videos of them just kind of freaking out when they get to actually meet her. Not meet her, they know her, but she's hiding in her own variation on the janitor's closet. So that's her costume is the janitor's closet of that show. Taylor Swift.
That's
Taylor
hysterical.
Swift changes everything.
Oh, no doubt. Don't get me started.
Well, I have been really excited to talk to you because, I mean, for a lot of reasons. First of all, the book just dropped. And for folks who have not had a chance to check it out yet, you're going to need a janitor's cart to hide your celebrity as a poet because we know poets are that celebrated in the United States. But this book is really excellent. So the collection is called Eschatology and Crayon Wax, and I did want to break the rules and ask you a couple of kind of processy questions. The first of which is, how did you figure out how to order them? Because the folks who haven't read it yet, it'll be a poem, and then after each poem there'll be another poem, but that next poem isn't titled. It's in italics. It's shorter. And so there's this kind of rhythm throughout. And what were you aiming for with that kind of mechanism, with that structure?
I really appreciate that, Ben. How thoughtfully you're reading,
Really good.
and thinking about how that structure might work. It's a weird book, I gotta be honest, and I worried honestly a little bit about how it's going to be received, but just mostly how it's going to be received rhetorically. Like, how are people going to track this? Basically, this book picks up where Praise Nothing left off, and Praise Nothing is kind of poems about seeking God, yearning for God, wanting there to be transcendence, not knowing if there is language to access it, but just desiring it. This book, Eschatology and Crayon Wax, is just like an end to that. It's this language doesn't exist. There were no answers. I was not given anything. So now, sort of, the persona is there talking to God, demanding answers from God, in this kind of Jovian
Yes.
way.
Okay, good. It
So,
wasn't just me. I was like, is this God's reply? Okay, so
yeah.
those italics are God's reply.
That's right.
And they are subtle enough that I was like, well, not even it's not just their subtlety. Often what God is talking about, readers will find, is not magisterial. It's, very it's the mundane. And I was like, this is a really interesting voice of God. Like, so I'm glad that I wasn't totally off base with that, because it's like, this is, God is often talking about things where you're going, why would God possibly be talking about this? And that fits perfectly with, maybe there isn't transcendence of any kind. Maybe God is the mundane and, the material and the universe in which we find ourselves. So I really dug that. That worked for me.
Yeah, that's a great read on it. And the voice of God there too is aloof and cruel and angry and confused and lost and comedic,
Yeah.
ironic, just referencing. I know this is sort of one of the ironies, at least I see it as ironic as the writer of the poem, I guess, is how embedded in so many of these poems are allusions to other poems. So God will like reference Whitman and take on Whitman's language in order to explain who God is, meaning like God has no language himself to explain
Right.
how he works. He's got to draw on the language of the poets in order to explain himself.
Well, and the way I
So
read
yeah,
that
it's a
too
constant
was
back
that
and forth.
God, it is maybe God is a function of human creation and of culture, right? That, God is drawing on these human voices as well, because maybe, and so that worked for me as well. I was like, oh, okay, whether God is describing something that is technological or something that is, I mean, these everyday or some drawing a reference, it's God is pulling from the human world, and it made me go, because maybe God is just this human construction, and that worked really well.
Yeah, thanks. No, I mean, I think your summary is really lovely. I appreciate that a lot.
Well, my other question, speaking of lovely, is the cover. So the cover is really cool, and I know you were involved in it. It says in the so who how did that come about? And I should I'll put up an image so folks can see it, but it is this image of kids in costume, Halloween, I'm presuming. They're all moving across the page, and the kid in one costume, everybody's having fun and dressed in their costumes and moving in one direction, and the kid in the center is stopped and looking right at us, and it's cool. It's a little haunting. How did that come about?
And the kid that's looking at us is sort of in a ghost costume, but has taken down, any kind of like ghost cowl, and just has that kind of death face paint and
Yeah.
just staring right at you, right? It's a painting called Halloween by a painter named Beau Bartlett, who is just is amazing. I always fail to find the right language for talking about painting, but he's someone I've loved for a long time, and this painting in particular I wanted for this book for years,
Yeah.
e even before I really even knew how the book was going to shape, what the shape of it was going to be, and it's sort of the content.
Oh yeah, I think it fits really
So
well.
thank you. Yeah, so I had to it, small presses don't have a lot of money,
Right.
Texas Review Press is a dream press to work with. They are a university press, and I went to them and said, hey, can I please have this as the cover image. And the just amazing editor J. Bruce Fuller said, well, if you can get the rights to it, then we can figure it out. And he's like, I don't normally do that, but I can see you really want this. So then I just had to navigate the art world, and I had to find agents and agencies and just email and calling people, and finally got it took a few weeks finally to get to someone who was close enough to Mr. Bartlett to get permission.
Yeah.
And I was expecting some fee, and they waived the fee, and it
That's
was
huge.
just yeah, it was huge. And they let me play around with the lettering, and the font, and kind of the color design. So I got to contribute to that too. I did not know that I was going to be given some credit on the
Yes.
cover design until it was actually even like weeks after I got the book, and I was like sort of going back through the front matter, and I was like, oh my God, wow, that's pretty cool. But
Yeah.
yeah, it's I joke to people, like, if the poems in the book are half as good as the cover, then then I'm gonna be all right with this one.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, a grabby cover matters. And folks who don't know kind of the way presses work, not to get too into the weeds, but university presses are wonderful. They are often, supported in part by the university, and then the people who are in charge have to do a lot of grant, try and get grant funding often. But what they contribute to the world of literature is incredibly important because they're publishing the stuff that nobody else would publish. It is, chapbooks, it is books of poetry collections, it is often short fiction. It's the stuff that they know is not going to pay for itself. And they're able to go, this is valuable and needs to be out there and needs to be in people's hands. Now, of course, they, just like any other publishing company, would love the exception, a book that, makes a ton of money and pays for all the other books. But they're willing to take some big swings and some big risks because they've got that, either the kind of not-for-profit backing, or they've got the university, and so they can do really good work. So if you've got a university press in near you, or you know somebody who's been published by a university press, pick up their work, support university presses, because they do really important work for all the rest of us in bringing voices to market that would not be otherwise. And yet, I'm still thinking, if one of our authors came to us, I would probably just say to them, that's going to be a lot of work, and you're probably going to get a no on finding art by somebody of that stature. So that's really cool that that worked out that way. So, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was your house. So, you live in this 100-year-old house that you've been working on. How has that been going?
It's great. It's great. I want to preface. San Antonio goes out in concentric circles, like many large cities. And San Antonio is also no different in that those concentric circles go out in terms of like class and income. And so you get suburbs that go further and further and further out away from, the downtown. We live in a historic district that is the original suburb of San Antonio. And I just love that. I'm so proud of that.
Yeah.
And there's a man-made lake about 3/4 of a mile in San Antonio
Yeah.
from just like in the middle of the, there's no water anywhere except for the river, I guess. But anyway, you can see the cable car tracks and where they end that used to go from downtown San Antonio out to our neighborhood. So when we found this neighborhood, originally we were like, we're never going to be able to move into this place. And then we bought this house that has good bones,
Yeah.
they told
Yep.
us, and it had been on the market forever. So yeah, it was sort of steadily remodeling and backfilling, and things show up out of nowhere, and you're like, okay, well now what am I
Right.
going to do with that? I don't know how to, shim a pier with a beam, in the crawl
Right.
space. And
Yeah.
but we the thing that we've recently been dealing with is the every house in the neighborhood has a pecan tree, and pecan trees in San Antonio are just those in Live Oaks are just iconic. And I just love this tree. So many memories of our little boys around it, and just sitting and under it and writing, and love this tree. And then we had a windstorm and it fell, and just blown right down. It was rotten. It was like a kitchen sponge. And, you know, we were devastated.
But it didn't hit the house.
It didn't hit the house. It went right between the house and the carport, basically. Miracle. Like, I don't know what the odds of that.
Right.
I mean, how could you possibly calculate that?
The tree did you one last favor.
One thing that it did do is part of it did hit a corner of the carport, which means apparently we're getting a new carport, which is good.
Yes.
So, you can't anticipate anything in an old house. It's a constant stress. It's a constant joy. We wouldn't want to live anywhere else, you know.
It's a lot
With
of
a house
liberty.
filled
Like,
with.
are you feeling like I know so much more about home building and home maintenance than I possibly could have before this house?
Yeah, and I quite enjoy it. I mean, my dad, sort of like we did that thing, or they did that thing of like, okay, we'll get our starter home and then we'll fix it up and move to the next one and so on and so on and so on. And so, you know, he taught me a few things and I inherited some of his tools. One thing I've learned quite a lot about is wood windows,
Oh,
and
yeah.
am in the process of, at some point, there's a million windows in this house because it's, you know, that's how old houses are, but is restoring those wood windows instead of, you know, replacing them with aluminum windows, which everybody does.
Right. One of the things you learn about wood windows is this is why we will switch to aluminum windows. They're hard. They're, you know, that the I mean,
Well,
what
but the
beautiful craft, and they're really cool,
yes.
but they're not standard, and they, you know, they require a certain a degree of work that, you know, modern builders are just like, no way, we're doing that. You know,
Oh,
that's a lot.
exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of reverse engineering I
Yeah.
found, and so
Yes.
when you're looking at wood that's from the 20s, and you can't get wood that's in that size, or even find that, you know, a two. What I found with one thing was like actual 2x4s when I redid our kitchen, like legit 2x4. But you go to Home Depot and they're like 1¾ by 3½,
Yes,
or
I did
something,
not know
some
this
god
either.
awful
And I was like,
number.
what, a 2x4 is a 2x4? No, they used to be. They're not actually anymore. We call them 2x4s, but they are not.
Yeah.
That is another layer of you're like, am I using metric? Why am I getting this wrong?
Yeah, but
Yes.
it's been a lot of fun. It's been a
Oh,
lot of fun. We feel blessed.
that is cool. So, pop culture. When you are being pulled away from your work by something other than your house, what has been pulling you away in terms of pop culture lately?
Well, my costume I mentioned came from Taylor Swift. So Taylor Swift is one of those pop culture phenomenons that I follow, but that's really not fair. I mean, I'm a diehard Swiftie and
Oh,
have been
really?
for,
Okay.
yeah, for
My
a
so
few,
in
since
my
COVID.
household, my partner got into Taylor Swift in the most backwards way. She started watching Travis Kelce's podcast, and it got her into this whole Sturm und Drang about, you know, I can't believe that it was her reaction against people who were opposed to Taylor Swift being in a happy, healthy relationship with somebody who's decent and in therapy was to go, I need to start paying more attention to this couple. And now she's, you know, listening to more Taylor Swift music and following the NFL. And I'm like, who are you? What the heck happened? You know, like she's like, I don't know why I know this, but the Eagles are one game back and it doesn't look like they're going to make it. That's Travis's brother. Like, I'm like, how did this, you know, like, so, oh, that's great.
Yeah,
So how
that's
long
too
have you been a
funny.
Swiftie?
Well, I got into Taylor Swift during quarantine and COVID, and a friend who was a Swiftie, I was miserable. We're all miserable. We're all feeling disconnected and depressed and confused. You know, and I'm watching the news constantly, trying to follow all the different narratives, and miserable, making everybody around me miserable. She said, just listen to Taylor Swift. I was like, nah, 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 Taylor Swift. Not even know anything about Taylor Swift. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to listen to only Taylor Swift for 1 month. No, no
Awesome.
audiobooks, no news, no podcasts, no nothing, just Taylor Swift. And there was a moment where I was like, okay, yep. Like it just clicked. It was Road to Damascus. Like, all right, here I am. I will follow you. Yeah, that's maybe a little extreme, but yeah, and I haven't looked back, and it's just such a fun community and so supportive and positive and uplifting. And I teach a Taylor Swift creative writing class, which has been
How
just
cool.
amazing for the students and how they form their own community. And yeah, it's brilliant.
So in a Taylor Swift creative writing class, is that poetry related to the lyrics? And are people doing fiction projects? What is, what all does that entail? And I love this idea. I need to figure out how to do something like this. That sounds really cool.
Yes. So, in the fall was the first time I did this, and it was I called it creative writing Taylor's version. You know, she does that
Yes.
when she re-releases, right? And it was basically a creative nonfiction class, though I approached it creative nonfiction from a bunch of different angles. So we did several different kinds of projects in that genre. Plus, you can't even define that genre anyway. And it was really successful. Everybody was extremely vulnerable. We all learned a lot about ourselves and about Taylor and about writing. And we read feminist texts, and we read religious texts, and we read pop music texts, and it was brilliant.
That is
This
really cool.
th this fall, I'm offering it again because there was so much demand, but as an advanced class, so it'll be a 4,000 level class, but it's going to be hybrid genre. And they are asking, like, well, what does that mean? They're all sort of a little suspicious because it's a 4,000 level class. And I kind of tell them, like, I don't really know. Like, let's find out together.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And they're starting to come to me with some, hey, could we do this? Hey, could we do that? And I'm like, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
So one of the things they want to do is write poems, turn the poems into songs, and then get with some of the students in music department to find people to put, you know, their lyrics to music.
Wow.
And I'm like, yeah, heck yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. Oh, how wouldn't
So
that
it's
be?
pretty
I mean,
great.
what a cool experience. I wrote my I made an attempt at writing my first song, and I turned to a friend who's got incredible musical talent and said, "Could this be put to music?" And he hasn't gotten back to me. And my suspicion is because he read the lyrics and went, "No, it can't. This will not fly with with any tune." I mean, writing lyrics. You and I both know it is a distinct form from writing poetry. We are, I'll have students who say, well, my favorite poem is this song, this lyrics to this song. And I'm like, those are lyrics, and that is legitimately a beautiful piece of artwork. But that person was also concerned with something that poets are not necessarily concerned about, like, does the chorus repeat three times? And is this danceable? Which are not things that you and I, when we are writing, free verse, are thinking to ourselves. And so, yeah, I have a lot of respect for lyricists, but it's a different ball of
It's
wax.
tough though with Taylor, I gotta say. It's tough with her because I argue this with my students too, and I'm always like, no, they are not the same. They overlap. There's a Venn
Right.
diagram we could draw however you want to talk about it,
Right.
right? But they're different. But ways that her songs move that are directly tied into the movement of poems in, you know, the Romantic era. Like this poem moves like this Keats poem, or this call, or this song moves like this Coleridge poem, and it
Yeah.
doesn't move like a pop song.
Yeah.
So I think she's somebody's, there's a term paper or a conference paper or something in there for somebody
Oh, it's that's a whole
to
PhD.
start to
That
do that.
somebody's going to do their PhD thesis
Maybe.
on, you know. In fact, it'll be that specific. It'll be the way these three songs move like Coleridge rather than, you know. So it'll be, you know, and somebody's going to get up and defend that, and everybody's going to go, we can't deny it. You're right. Like, I guess
Yeah,
you get your doctorate
exactly.
now.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they're going to be like, hey, everybody, they're going to hop on Twitter and say, guess what? I just defended. And I'm going to be like, that's amazing. There won't be a
Well,
Twitter.
you'll appreciate this, just on a related note, to put a bow on this, is there are some fellow Swifties in the writing community, different genres. We're putting together a panel proposal for that conference,
Oh,
AWP, for
yeah.
how to teach a creative a Taylor Swift creative writing class from different genres. So
Where is
this is going to become, what's that?
AWP this next one? Because there's somebody listening right now who's like, I will travel to AWP to see that panel.
Shoot. I think it's in Chicago.
I think that's right. Yeah, this next one is, yeah. So that, yeah, that absolutely. I mean, for folks who don't know AWP, this is the Association of Writing Programs. I think it's Association of Writing Programs. So it is the you know, creative writing programs, the English departments of all these different universities get together for their big annual thing. And it's a blast. It's huge. It's, you know, 40,000 people descend on a city, and they're all a bunch of writing nerds. And it's a really fun group of people to get together, and you end up with these fun panels. I got to do one on, we did the as our company did the Year of Publishing Women. And so that's kind of what got us on the door, was explaining to folks this is why this was so important in the publishing industry to only publish women for a year and kind of make that commitment. And that was fun, but a bunch of the panels are really creative and interesting like that, and I think they would eat that up. So yeah, that's one I'll bet folks will go, I'm going to Chicago,
Yeah, I hope
I
so.
gotta see
Yeah.
that one. That's a kick. And there is a really healthy thing in the kind of writing community about kind of pushing back on, you know, if the hater's gonna hate, then somebody at AWP is gonna go, then we've got to go stand up for Taylor. And so that'll be
That's
good.
right. Yeah, you got it.
So what else has been pulling you away news-wise lately from your work?
Man, I'm sort of flummoxed at that question. I and embarrassed, maybe. I'm not, I need to think more about what I'm feeling here, but the reality is I have had to stop paying attention to the news. Mostly what that means is I stopped paying attention to the kind of horse race narratives. And the day-to-day grind of politics and votes and all of that, because it just made me miserable, and then it was hard for people to live with me.
I know, I think that is totally legitimate. I am one of those people who falls into that and then becomes miserable. Not just for myself, I make others miserable with my own
Right.
fear. You know, a lot of what motivated me to get so obsessed with the news was fear in the first place. You know, finding out, oh, there's a lot I don't know, and I'm scared of the fact that these things took me by surprise. And then I've become that person who's like, didn't you hear about this thing? Aren't you freaked out? Why are you not freaked out? And that is not a pleasant, you know, and so I am having to learn to modify not just my intake, but like, it's okay for me to read a story and not bother anybody about it. Like, it's just, you know, like, so yeah,
Yeah, and
I can respect that.
I'm one who also looks for opportunities to set my hair on fire. And so, when you're so plugged in like that, it's very easy. It's just light them up. But there is a feeling that when you're a writer, I think, and for me as a poet, like I am aware of what's going on in the world, the larger stories of injustice and suffering and war and violence and and so constantly engaged with those through the lens of poetry, trying to understand how poetry can respond, if it can. And sometimes I feel like it can't. Like how what can a poem I write do at all? Like realistically, nothing, right? I was at this event actually today, this Poetry Month event today, and amazing poet Naomi Shihab Nye was a guest on this panel. And she's from San Antonio, but she was Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets. You know, she's like world famous.
Yeah.
You know her.
No, I'm just saying, wow, that's high level Academy of American Poets. I know of her work. Yes.
And so, and she said that I forget what exactly the question was, but her response, it was something along these lines, and her response was that a friend had sent her a cassette tape of bird calls, and her friend lives in Gaza with her mother and her two sisters, and sent Naomi this cassette just to show, like, see, like, some of the world still operates how it's supposed to. So can you share that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's, there's the news,
Yeah.
there's poetry, there's the connection, there's our role in it, right? William Carlos Williams has that line of from a poem where he says it's difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day from the lack of what is found there. And I always quite like that, but I also like pushing back against that. I don't know necessarily that that's the right way to think about this anymore. Maybe it was many decades ago, but I think we also do have to continue to ask, like, what can poems do, and not to settle for, like, as I did earlier, like, I don't know, they can't do anything, right? We have to keep pushing. Some of that, I think, in San Antonio is a good example of how poetry serves such an important function within a community, for sharing stories, especially,
Yes.
and connection. And there are places in San Antonio that are parks dedicated to poetry. Isn't that wild?
That's very cool.
Yeah. And so, I think we are maybe people, like, I guess we were talking earlier about, maybe it was before we started here, that we teach poetry in such the wrong way, that it's all these, it's all the people in the anthology that was published in the 60s. And it's not. It is very vibrant.
Yeah.
It's out there, and it matters to people, and it connects people, and it can make change.
Yeah, I mean I feel like the way the poetry is, here's the newspaper article, just the facts, and then here's the editorial, somebody trying to tell you this is what you should do about it. And then, stepping back even further, here's the historian's book of, rigid analysis. And then the poet is the one furthest back saying, and this is how I felt about it. And that's, that it is still the day's events, but it's, we can connect because I am letting you know how this has affected a human, and you can now connect as a human, beyond the facts. And so it still, I believe, does have a role to play in the news, but you're right, it's something like, and did anyone notice the birds? It's the
Right.
noticing that goes beyond. It's not going to make the headlines. Hey, the birds are still singing in Gaza, but holy crap, the birds are still singing in Gaza is a line of a poem, right? That's
Exactly.
incredibly
Exactly.
powerful.
Yes. Very well said.
Yeah. So what else has been pulling you away when you're not writing and you're trying to stay out of the headspace of the horse race, which is not constructive often? What is a hobby that's bringing you some joy?
Some joy. Well, honestly, the first thing that comes to mind is my beloved Chelsea Football Club.
I kind of knew that was coming. Yeah, we were not going to get through without Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hope that kills you is the line. And it is so true. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I am deep in. I have been for many years. It is,
What got you into it? I mean, I'm assuming that in the United States, this was not a, a childhood thing. Was this something that grabbed you later in life?
no, I mean, I grew up playing,
Oh, you did. Okay.
and I played at Whitworth, and so I love soccer, but then grad school, and I totally lost track of anything. So, aside from, my family and reading and writing poetry.
Right.
And then, but then when we started, when we moved to Tennessee, and in my PhD program, I had to have some sort of like outlet, otherwise I was gonna explode, And you can't watch, you couldn't watch Premier League soccer on TV. Like it was just sort of starting to come in. Like if you had cable and you could,
Right, VPN. I mean, yeah.
so we got cable, and but you could only see like five teams. They would only show those games. And so I was like, all right, well, if I really want to do this, I need to find a team. And I'm just going to watch everybody. I'm going to take my time and decide, and then that'll be it. No going back. And so I chose Chelsea, and I liked their narrative because it's so fun just to follow. I guess it's sort of like politics in a way, but it just doesn't make you
Yes.
miserable. Although it does make you miserable, but it's a different
It's a different kind of
kind of
misery, yes.
misery. And the characters, I was talking to my 10-year-old because they all love Chelsea too, and he referred to the players as characters. In a conversation, I was like, wow, yeah, that is it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's constant news, so it's healthier in a way. And we love getting up at, 4 in the morning to watch the game against Man United and get donuts. And it's like there's so much ritual to it as
Yes.
well. People talk about football as religion. It totally is. It's a thing that is now making its way into my writing too. I wondered when this was going to happen. It sort of started to happen after eschatology got picked up. So I'm starting to work on a collection of nonfiction essays about not just Chelsea, but essays about football and essays about fatherhood and sort of
Yeah.
masculinity, which has been a lot of fun. Like I'll just give you an example. I started this essay called Andre Pirlo's Beard, who is, you gotta look him up. He's like one of my favorite all-time players. He played for Juventus, he's Italian. And he's this guy who just marshals the midfield, right? I don't know, he's probably 5'8", 5'7", maybe. And just one of those guys who just doesn't run. He just walks, and he knows what position to be in at the
Yeah.
right time, when to lay a tackle, and he just plays these amazing, just drop a dime, long balls, short balls. But what I loved about him is his beard. It's like it just gave him this sort of regal intensity. Like he would just look at one of his teammates and just assume kill them as like say good job. And so I've been thinking about him and just honestly about learning to shave.
Yes.
And I don't know, that's what creative nonfiction lets you do, is kind of like it opens up different pathways that you would never anticipate showing up, and you just get to follow them. So it's a lot of fun. So Chelsea is sort of finally affecting my writing. I've written some really bad Chelsea poems that I've never shown anyone. They're more like Chelsea songs, I think.
Yeah.
I took one to the Chelsea bar, and showed it to the main guy, and he was like, "Well, how are we supposed to sing this?" And I was like, "Oh, right, okay, yeah, it doesn't really have." Doesn't have like a rhyme scheme, and it doesn't have, yeah, okay, never mind.
Yes.
Sorry.
But I would be interested if here's a prompt for you. Write a poem about Chelsea and the news and which matters more. And what does it mean to matter? Because this is something I have been, my sports love is I love this thing that I also hate how much energy I put into it because I also am suspicious that it is irrelevant. And then I have to say to myself, and maybe that's okay. Maybe it is healthy to have the drama, the characters that don't have some great cosmic import and that are not going to destroy somebody's life. And that it's this thing that matters because we have decided it matters and that's enough. And so I think there's certainly a poem in which matters more, Chelsea, or the thing that I'm trying to convince myself matters. And what does it mean to matter? There's something.
No, I will take that challenge. Give me maybe 3 years on
Yes.
that. But the thing about football is this in the US. It is inherently political, right? Like, and it's based in class and race and obviously nation states. So I have to get this out there. I'll try and make it quick, but when Russia invaded Ukraine, the owner of Chelsea Football Club, who's Russian, had to sell the team. He was forced by the British government to sell
Wow.
it. And it caused just huge, all kinds of problems because for a time, the British government owned Chelsea Football Club. And it's not supposed to be like that,
Yeah.
but they didn't have any buyers. And there wasn't money for the club to pay stewards, concessions, anyone, travel. And so it was just chaos at the
Yeah.
club. No one knew. There was potential that it was going to be dissolved because this owner was a Putin oligarch. So you can't, it's like you can't escape. Football isn't a total escape from the world.
Right.
I think in a way it magnifies, I don't want to say what's most important, but like some essential things
Yeah.
that maybe we wouldn't see in, or it gives us a different light to see some of these essential things. So I think that's important.
Yeah, I in one of my novels I wrote about I'm a big NBA fan, and I wrote about this passage where in my first published novel, where God and Jesus are sitting on a couch and they're watching a basketball game together, and God's perception of the game is not just what is going on in terms of the game. He's looking at the parquet floor that the Celtics play on, and he's seeing the World War II soldiers who lived in the houses that were made out of that parquet floor. Like it goes to the foundation, right? It goes to the bottom, because you're absolutely right. If you're watching soccer, it's in a stadium in Saudi Arabia that was built by Malaysians who literally died to make that stadium. And so you can't escape the fact that it is intimately connected to our world. That is an expression of values. And yet maybe who wins or loses that game matters less than the Malaysian person who died to make that stadium. And that is a tension that, we're not paying attention to the who the person who is dying in Ukraine is the cause of the team being sold. Like it's this, many, many layers away is will that person make that pass from midfield into the forward? Like there's you're right. This is a 3-year poetry project for you. There's a lot.
I will complete it though, I promise.
Oh, that I think it could be so good. Okay, well, I always ask authors because the whole point of the show is I want people when they're picking up eschatology in crayon wax to say, "Oh, I feel like I know Josh Robbins a little better because I heard this show. I've got to pick up this book." So, one of the questions I ask is, if you were a Dungeons and Dragons character, so even if you're not a D&D person, this is a good Rorschach test, I think. If you were a character in Dungeons and Dragons yourself, not who would you play, but actually you, what would be your race and class?
I have no idea, right? I don't know Dungeons and Dragons. I know kids in the neighborhood play it. That's about as close as I am to it. I could answer it with maybe I got my Captain America shield
I know,
back
right
here.
on. There we go. I'm more of a
You
Marvel
got
guy
it.
myself than D&D, but yes.
Yeah. But I could do it in a maybe an MCU sort
Yes,
of
absolutely.
answer. I adore, I'm so deeply moved by WandaVision. If you
Yeah.
haven't seen that, people out there, please, 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 please. And I would say, if I'm answering the question correctly, I think I would identify with or be Wanda Maximoff.
That is a great choice. And so what folks who don't know, Wanda Maximoff is this really interesting character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She's in the comics goes back to, I believe, the 60s. The Scarlet
Yeah.
Witch was one of the early Avengers, not one of the original Avengers, but one of the early Avengers. And her powers are really interesting. She has kind of chaos magic. It's almost like she can manipulate the odds of things happening, but not quite the way Longshot, who's another character, could. It wasn't all just what was the lucky thing. It was, she could create kind of chaos, and that was this interesting plot point. And then she falls in love with a robot, the Vision, and because of her magic in the comic book, they had children, which was
Yes.
wild. And so on
So
this
weird, yeah.
kind of TV version, instead, she ends up, not to spoil anything, but in this town where she's got the perfect family and she's got, her robot husband. And the show is done brilliantly, where there's this constant sense that this is eerie and off. And the first episodes are, I think, the strongest in the whole thing, because they're just creepy enough that you're like, this is cute and twee and the wonderful life of Wanda, and something weird is going on. And so do check it out. I do want to recommend it. But so w what why what does it reveal about you, Joshua Robbins, poet, that Wanda Maximoff is the character that you would most identify with?
I just think, and then this isn't in the comic books. I guess this is from the movies. Is her the trauma that she suffered as a girl? And there's all this irony connected to the Stark Industries and how she did or did not get her powers, but. Of just how she is unrelenting, that she carries that trauma but will not stop moving forward. And that's sort of one of the central conflicts too in WandaVision, which I don't think spoils anything. But she's a character that experiences great mood swings. And that's part, I think, of being a Nexus being, if we're going to get like too comic book nerdy. But she's also very caring and protective. But when something crosses her, I mean, that's it, especially if you cross her children or family. But in WandaVision, there's such, I mean, what's the name of the actress? Elizabeth Olsen,
Yes.
the actress, I think. There's such a, like, just a profound vulnerability and depth and subtlety to the way that she plays the character that I just identify with. I don't know. I hope that doesn't sound vain. It's just it's cathartic almost, just to
Yeah,
that
that.
show is so cathartic. It's utterly tragic and
Yes.
devastating,
Well, and
but
folks
that's
who've
also
not,
very
been
human.
following the MCU, I guess who is the person out there who has read the comics but not followed the MCU? This is a demographic that does not exist. But this character in the comic books was, never going to be a main character. I mean, she was written to be this, second tier character in a group. But I really do think that Olsen herself, the actor who plays her, brings so much to the part that she demanded people's attention. They were like, we need more of this character. And then they created so much more around her, and she became so much more important because of exactly that depth that you described, that she, the actor, really brought that to that part and made us go, oh, I really identify. And that is, I can totally see why that is something that you relate to, because she is an incredible, the actor has made her an incredibly complex person. And do you feel that kind of conflict and tension and kind of multifaceted humanness in a way that comes through in your work? Do you think that's the Wanda Maximoff connection is, you have a job where you get to be a multifaceted person, almost presentationally. You get to wear your complexity in a way a lot of jobs don't allow.
Wow. Oh man, I don't know. So much of well, the poems in this book are very much personal. But they're still persona, right? So at least for me, I can write them. In a weird way, I know I don't, this isn't like a session with my shrink, but in a weird way, I think writing isn't so much, sometimes isn't so much of a release of emotion. It's not that spontaneous overflow of emotion, recollected in tranquility. In a way, this is sort of gross now that I think about this, but it's a way of like suppressing emotion, a sort of way of like kind of considering emotion, and then I can move on, so I don't have to like totally address something or deal with something. And I do. I think that's what Wanda is going through, especially in WandaVision. What's the There's the comic book run. It's not. It is what I think it is, a West Coast Avengers run, where she basically kills everyone. She screams, it's no more mutants, right? She screams, no more mutant, right? Do you know that one?
I know the images of it because I follow a person on Twitter who goes writes as though she is Wanda and shares
Oh,
all this
wow.
stuff from, and it's a really fun Twitter because most of it is like that, my tweets today about how much I love the Vision, but there are those, should includes a lot of the artwork, so I know that of that storyline where it's kind of
You
the
should
Dark Wanda.
read that whole run if you haven't, because that's definitely there in the writing for WandaVision. Not that we're doing a comic book nerd podcast here,
Hey, no, everything is legit. Everything is fair game.
but I hope that made sense. I just mean that poetry isn't always confession, and poetry isn't always like pure expression, and it's not catharsis. At least for me,
No, for me too, but I think there is a tension there where, and I think the kind of superhero angle is a good metaphor. The superhero is trying to choose a costume that represents their genuine self and also hides their identity. And there's a lot of poetry that is, this is the real me that I choose to show you. And that's challenging. Here is the persona of mine that I've picked. So it really is me because I picked it. But it's also the persona that I picked. This is my WandaVision costume, And is Wanda's costume even a costume, especially when we're first introduced to her? Or are we supposed to believe this is the way she dresses every day? And I think
Right.
that might have been one of the reasons that she appealed was she's this kind of punk, angry Sokovian is the fictional country she comes from. And maybe she's a super villain and we should see her as the enemy, or maybe she's a angry punk who is fighting with the good guys, or maybe she's a victim of a lot of trauma who needs rescuing. And that's a cool it's a cool place to be uncertain about that, and it's cool to go into a book of poetry saying the person whose poems I am reading is not presenting themselves as the pure hero. They are trying to present themselves legitimately, but it's a presentation. That's a cool tension to hold.
Yeah, that's really well said. Yeah, thanks for that.
Well, on that note, we'll now go to the most artificial of artificialities, our ad break. Capitalism injects itself into the show. But when we come back from our ad break, I'm going to ask you what you've been daydreaming about lately. Special announcement time. Nautipi Publishing has always been committed to helping authors and readers find one another. Well, the show, which is all about helping readers get to know writers, just hit a milestone. 10,000 views on YouTube. So to celebrate, instead of charging authors to advertise their books on the show, I'm going to run your ads for free throughout 2024. If you want to make a 30 to 60 second video about your book, let folks know what it's about and where to find it. And don't forget your name and the title. I'll run one or two of those in our ad spot each week. Just send an MP4 file to the Nautipipe email address in the show notes. Let's fix up some readers and authors into reader relationships. 2024, more readers, more writers, more books.
Hi, I'm Dust Jackson. I'm here to tell you about my book, Chronicles of Dawn, Book 1, Weapon of God. This is a series, a trilogy right now. See where it goes from there. It talks of the main character, our main protagonist, Dawn Lightfeather. She is a Nephilim, meaning half angel, half human. She has incredible abilities, powers, but she's not unstoppable. So it's available on Amazon, Kindle, and Nook, and various other ebooks out there. For paperback and hardcover, it's available on Amazon only right now. And if you have any questions, concerns, comments, or whatever, please drop me a line at chroniclesofdawn@gmail.com. That's chroniclesofdawn@gmail.com. It'll be right here.
Alexandra has never been so far from home or so deep in danger. Now fans can follow the journey to the end. Reader Views says New Horizon is a fantastic beginning to the Europa Trilogy. This riveting adventure will have you hanging on to the edge of your seat. Get all the books of the trilogy, New Horizons, Challenger, and New Frontiers, wherever you buy books. Or visit the author at michellecleigh.com. Lee spelled L-E-I-G-H. Join the adventure today. Authors, poets, screenwriters, writers of all kinds. We're putting together our team for the Alzheimer's Association's annual The Longest Day fundraiser, and we want you to join us to use your writing superpowers for a good cause. Our team, Writing Against the Darkness, joins together via Zoom or in-person meetups and writes from dawn until dusk on the summer solstice. So mark your calendars for Thursday, June 20th, 2024. We're teaming up with some wonderful partner organizations to build our team, thanks to the Author Alchemy Summit, Indigo Editing, Unsolicited Press, Pile Press, the Pile Press magazine Chunk, and Overcup Press for joining with Nautipipe Publishing in this fundraiser. There are links to all of those partners in the show notes. If you want to get to network with writers from these great partners, get a whole lot of writing done, and raise funds for Alzheimer's research and care for families suffering from this disease, click on the link in the show notes and join the team. You're going to be writing anyway. Why not write even more and do some extra good for the world? See you there. Welcome back, everybody. So, Josh Robbins, what have you been daydreaming about lately?
In a weird way, there's a word for this, double consciousness. I don't think that's it, but I've been sort of daydreaming in the mind of myself as a boy and how I used to think about the end of the world. I've been obsessed with the end of the world for my entire life. I think growing up in a particular church that had a particular library where you could go and get books that were, you know, this is how the world is going to end. And these are the different kinds of returns that Christ might decide to do. And, you know, you could read those books. What were those called?
What was his name? I know what you're talking about. The Left Behind ones.
No, really popular series. Frank Peretti?
Yes, the angels and yes, the
The angels and the demons
are having this big fight over our heads and we can't see them, but yes.
Yeah, and they live amongst us and right. But there was this one book that I obsessed over and I like kept it under my pillow at night. Like it was like revelatory, and it was all based in Revelation and scripture. And it was about different wars that were going to happen and Russia moving here and sort of like Iran doing this. And it was all very specific, which was terrifying because it had authority. But then it there was also this other part about the magnetic poles flipping. And I can still see the cover. It was a small book. But for the life of me, like, I can't see enough to remember the title.
Yeah.
I tried doing some Google image searches and different filters and stuff, but to no avail. But
Yeah, and if you do a
kind
Google keyword search that's, world end magnetic poles flip Iran Russia, you would be so deluged in QAnon stuff, you'd never find an actual text. So
Exactly. But it's sort of a weird exercise of trying to daydream in the mind of my sort of boyhood self.
yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I think it is. I that as an exercise, it's cool, but it also sounds kind of haunting. Like, do you feel like you're peeling away the layers of yourself that you would use to protect yourself from that as a child, and feel it as a kid would feel it? Because the emotional feeling would be a lot.
some of that is in the book, actually. There's a the title poem for the book, Eschatology and
Yeah.
Crayon Wax, is references some of these things from church growing up. And I think maybe that's sort of an antidote to now, to where I am now. So I don't really experience the anxiety and the fear and the confusion and the judgment that I did way back then. I didn't understand that those were the emotions then.
Right.
But so I'm sort of, adult removed from that and can have a critical mind too, as I'm kind of trying to re-inhabit that time in my life. But yeah, I mean, poetry is dangerous in a lot of ways because it gives us opportunities to go to places that we don't want to go. I always tell my students that our job here is to write the toughest thing. And when we do, that can be devastating and also be incredibly freeing. And so, that poem in particular about trying to figure out when the world was going to end as a kid, thinking about it now, almost in a new way, just because of this conversation, was incredibly freeing. That I think I had some a whole lot of resentment for that, and no one helping me, and no one stopping me,
Yeah, I mean the
and no
opposite,
one
throwing you in
validating
like, hey, you're learning to swim. We're throwing you into the deep end of the Book of Revelation. Like, that's scary stuff.
right. So where is everybody, but maybe there's some, in a way, some kind of forgiveness there too, and then you turn it into art.
Right.
Those difficult moments, tragic moments, they can become beauty too.
Well, and I can tell you, I read that poem and had a very different emotional reaction to it than the poetic voice. For me, it was comforting. And I don't know if that is what was your expectation, but I teach a sci-fi lit class, and over the last, we're doing a unit where we're kind of going through some of the history of some of the classic science fiction films. And in order to give them context, I'm kind of talking to them about the early 1950s and what the situation was when The Day the Earth Stood Still was made, and then we're doing Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and I'm talking about the malaise of the late 70s, and it is then reading that poem in that same context, I was like, oh yeah, the world has always been ending for everyone. Like, it's good for me to reflect on the fact that I am so afraid so much of the time of the ways the world is, is a mess, is not distinct from people living in 19, 50s going, yay, World War II is over, and also we could all die tomorrow. Like, we can populate our minds with our own contemporary Book of Revelation every day.
No, it's really true, but part of the cyclical narratives there are that, like, okay, get under your desk because a bomb might fall. And when you're eight, what?
Right.
Okay, you just go, You just go for it. You just go with it. Like, oh yeah, we don't like
Distinctly
that guy
remember
because.
that exercise. I tell students about it and they just think it's bonkers. But again, I tell students we used to do this bonker thing where, now I joke about how we were basically told to get under your desk and kiss your ass goodbye. Like, this
Yeah.
is, it's going to do nothing but keep us in terror. But my students now are doing lockdown drills for shoot active
I
shooter.
know it.
You know, how far have we come? Like, hey, the adults of your world have created a nightmare scenario for you and want to remind you on a regular basis that they don't care enough to prevent this. Like, that's an awful message that we give kids on a regular basis.
Well, and if we're thinking about the Cold War, in a lot of ways that's myth. And at the time, it's myth. This is no myth. What you're describing is very much, stark reality.
I feel that. Do you folks have to do at the university level, like, prep for what happens when this happens on a campus?
Yes, I mean it's we just have the most sort of basic click through the PowerPoint thing. I don't know, this will be published somewhere, so I'm gonna not say some things. There is always more that needs to be done, and Texas is a difficult state to live in when it comes to gun rights and accessibility, access to guns. Pretty much you can have one if you want one. You don't need any permit. You can put it wherever you want. Nobody needs to know. And that's I don't know. It sort of is what it is. It doesn't need really comment.
But I mean, there it does need poetry. Like, this is something where, we can go beyond the headline of these are just the bare facts, which are horrific and also seem completely intractable, and get people to, but this is what it feels like to live in a situation where this is the world we live in, and we can't change it. And so yeah, write the new safety plan for your university in verse.
Something needs to be done. I mean, but San Antonio again is a great example of that. Anytime these changes happen, it's, there are marches, there are letter writing campaigns, there are protests, and I see your protests on social media, which is always inspiring. So we don't need to be, it's hard to say. It's hard to say, but we don't need to be stuck at home. We can get out there and maybe make change.
But it's also living with the limits of our ability to make change. That is, and that, I think one of the cool things about poetry is it is both a mechanism to express frustration with the limits of our ability to make change, and potentially an avenue to connect with human beings, which is how you make change. So we're, I am so frustrated about the fact that I cannot change the universe, and I have shared that with you so that maybe you will share my frustration and we will change the universe. Like, that's a really cool tension to contain on the page, but it's a challenging, it's how do I get the right words for to hold that crystalline kind of little bit of ice there and not break it. That's tough.
I just add that, I think when it comes to issues like this, poets have to really consider audience, because as soon as the poem becomes polemical or didactic, like that's it, it's over. And people are so divided, they know what they want to hear. If it's not that, then we're done. So you have to carve out a space in a poem that allows anyone to enter it and to exist within it, and then to experience some other subjectivity for just a moment in a single image or in a single stanza, and then come out on the other side, and hopefully, I don't want to use the word changed, but affected in a way that, okay, now I do sort of understand another way of looking at this. Now maybe I could smile at this person, or maybe I could, not be so angry at the grocery store. when I see this other person who doesn't look like me, in little ways, and then it kind of cascades out. But as soon as poets are out there going, saying the same thing that we all know and we all agree, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
We can do better.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, but I very much feel that tension. Like I have poems where I know I failed in that one. I went too far. That one is only preaching to the choir, And so, how do and some of that's in the editing. Anyway, we're getting into process. I shouldn't do that. This is not a show about that.
Oh yeah, right. My bad.
Yes, I totally feel that. So, what are some? You've got a lot going on, especially with the book just dropping, but what are some other announcements that you want to make sure folks are aware of?
God, well, if you're in San Antonio, I am out there. We are out there. Come join National Poetry Month. I don't have anything else coming out because the book is just out. So I'm kind of all over the city and hopefully soon all over the state promoting it. I've got a new website up, which is joshuarobbins.net. And so you can find information about where I will be on that website, as well as ways to purchase the book if you would like to get a signed copy.
Yes.
I'm pretty active on social media, especially on Instagram. My Instagram is Josh Robbins Writes. But just trying to stay connected, bring people together, make connections, and always writing as much as I can.
Well, and speaking of social media, there was a TikTok fundraiser that you were promoting. You were telling me about it, and I wanted to give you a chance to tell folks about that. So that's really cool.
Yeah, Mercury Stardust. You need to look her up on Instagram. She is the trans handyman. She's fantastic, and I've learned a lot from her feed on how to do simple repairs around the house. And she'll also talk about sort of larger structural things, and just really, really knows what she's doing. Well, she started a week ago, maybe, a fundraiser on Instagram and on TikTok to raise funds for trans health. And her goal was to raise $2 million. And I remember seeing that and like, wait, what? Well, she did it. $2 million. And I think I have to go back and look. I think it only took like 8 days or something. So think about that. I mean, think about where we've been, especially in terms of trans rights and visibility. It's incredible. She also has a wonderful book. The title escapes me now, but you can find it at her Instagram account. So I would encourage everybody, go check it out. Go take a look.
Yes, and I will link to that in the show notes. So if you're listening to this on your podcast app or checking it out on YouTube, just scroll down and you will see a link there. But yes, that sounds like something that we certainly want to encourage. I will check that out. I wanted to ask you about what is currently in your to read pile? So, the show is a no homework show. You don't have to have read it before, but what are you looking forward to reading?
Well, it's almost the summer, and so our academic year is going to end, and we will have a summer off. And I am planning to read a lot of creative nonfiction, because it seems like that's what I want to write right now. So I teach it, I write it off and on, but I'm going to start with this book right here, which is World of Wonders, by Amy Nezhukumatathil. I heard her read. She's in town for National Poetry Month.
Cool.
I heard her read last night from it. It's just beautiful. It's World of Wonders in Praise of Fireflies, Whale Sharks, and Other Astonishments. And they're just little short essays about the natural world and things that she finds amazing. And they're gorgeous. And the language just drips from your mouth. So I'm looking forward to getting into that. And then one of my favorite poets is Larry Levis. I don't know if you know him at all,
I
Ben.
don't, but I take your recommendation seriously, so I will go
You
check him
yeah,
out.
you will love him, and we can talk over email about where to start if you want to get into him. He has a he had a posthumous book called Elegy that was published, and then I don't know, it might be like 10 years ago now, but I haven't read it yet, called Darkening Trapeze, which is kind of the sort of collected poems, poems that weren't published, poems
Yeah.
that were on, napkins and bits and pieces. And so I think I'm going to try and get into that. I've set that aside for a long time because I didn't know how I felt about it even existing in the world.
I have had that too, where you're like, I'm not sure this should have been published, so I'm gonna have trouble getting into it. And then you're like, but it exists, and I do want, yes.
That's it.
Barry
That's
Levis.
it. Yeah.
I will check that
Yeah.
out.
Yeah,
And
you
yes,
love them.
I will post links to where folks can find your book, but I do highly recommend it. So Eschatology and Crayon Wax, joshrobbins.net, Facebook, all that. So we'll encourage folks to check that out as well. So who else would you recommend I have on the show as a guest?
There is a, like I said, San Antonio, land of writers. There's a wonderful fiction writer in San Antonio. His name is Todd Wright. He actually teaches at UTSA. And he's just I keep using this generous, but he is. He's just this generous, gregarious, compassionate, charming person who runs or ran this reading series in San Antonio called Worth Repeating, and it was for Texas Public Radio. It was kind of like The Moth. Do you know
Yeah,
that?
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like The Moth, and so he certainly knows how stories work. He's a published fiction writer, but he also does these really kind of cool things. Like he has a YouTube channel that he has with friends called Like-Minded Lunatics. And they have this audio drama there called The Adventures of Hero Man. And it's like old school audio drama with like, they make the sound effects and
Yes,
everything.
fully.
Isn't
Love
that
it.
so? Yeah. And he also collects original Nintendo games and can just go chapter and verse about, all of Nintendo. He's just a really interesting guy. You would love having a conversation with him.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, I will reach out. That sounds great. So before we do our send off, some folks I need to thank. Thanks to the artist Max Oakland, who reached out and provided one of his songs for our intro song. His song, I Prefer the Dusk. Let Max know you like it by following him on Twitter at Max Oakland with 3 Ds. And thanks to Helisna CCO for their song, Kids, for the ad break. If you're in a band and you'd like your song used on the show, I'd love to highlight a listener's work like Max's song, so email me about that. Thanks to Doug, the producer, for making the show sound good and taking the blame when it doesn't. And I cannot forget to mention, Writers Not Writing is a production of Not a Pipe Publishing. So please go to notapipepublishing.com and check out the amazing books written by writers who didn't procrastinate too much. If you like this show, rate and review it wherever you found it. Check out Josh's new collection of poetry, Eschatology and Crayon Wax, and follow him on Instagram at Josh Robbins Writes. Tell a friend about the book. So good. I mean, you get the book, read it, you won't be able to help telling people about it. It will make you think things. You will be processing it, which is an excellent place to be in terms of your headspace too. And then once you are doing so, give it a review. Reviews really matter. Click that fifth star, makes a huge difference, make Josh's day. I am too old to say smash that like button, but please, gently tap an odd number of times on the stars for this show on the little thumbs up there. That makes a big difference for us too. Joshua and I want you to remember three things as you enter into your week this next week. Josh, what is your advice for everybody?
My advice is simple: read more poems. It is National Poetry Month. Poetry is everywhere. Go to Academy of American Poets, go to poems.com, go to Poetry Foundation, go to your coffee shop, go to your open mic, read a poem, share a poem, give a poem, keep a poem in your pocket.
Yes, I love the put in your pocket. And I would say, my follow-up to that would only be, I totally agree. And National Academy of Poets and poetry dot is it poetry.org do a poem a day in your email inbox. And it's National Poetry Month, but it doesn't have to end. At the end of this month, sign up for those. It will make your life better. Just having a daily poem to read, I have all of my students sign up for both. And I know some of them never read them, but some of them find themselves reading two poems a day. And if you're reading two poems a day, your life will be improved. So check that out. And then the last thing that I always want you to know is, it's a show about procrastination, but please remember, no matter how much you procrastinate, Josh and I are still proud of you.
My time.